This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Back here on WEEI just after 5 o'clock. It is Sunday, March the 9th, 2025. Thanks for being with us. I'm Dan Ball. Got my man David Azar back behind the glass today, taking you up until 6 o'clock with your calls at 617-779-7937. That voice was Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet at the time mentioning the possibility, quote unquote, of Brad Marchand being traded from the Boston Bruins to the Florida Panthers. That possibility became a reality as Friday afternoon rolled along in one of the most jarring trades that Bruins fans have seen in quite a while. And there was a trade maybe about 30 years prior that was evoked in the memories of a lot of Bruins fans when we were talking about Brad Marchand being traded. So we knew the what of the situation. And I would like to preface this conversation by saying this. I have come onto these airwaves in various day parts and trumpeted the benefits of the Boston Bruins trading Brad Marchand. Yes, it is jarring in a vacuum to trade your captain, trade a Stanley Cup champion, trade a veteran, and trade, let's call a spade a spade, one of the very few good players that you have on your roster right now. It's a very jarring thing to do all those things, and you were doing all those things by trading Brad Marchand. And I fully understand that it's a tough thing to stomach. But before we knew the return and before we knew what happened before behind closed doors, I looked at it as strong asset management by the Boston Bruins. You are a team that is behind the eight ball in terms of where you are in the standings and also the games in hand that other teams have around you. Yes, could you have snuck your way into a wild card? Absolutely, you could have. What happens when you get into the playoffs, though? Another first-round exit? Are you telling me Jeremy Swayman's going to stand on his head with his sub-900 save percentage this year and backstop the Bruins to an upset victory over a number one seed in one of these divisions and then go on this magical run as the Cinderella story? Did you really feel that? Did you think that defense and goaltending, two things that win championships and won the Bruins a championship in 2011, were strong enough on this team to justify keeping Brad Marchand and, God forbid, even adding at the deadline? If you did, all right, that's fine, and you may be proven right in the end, but I did not. So my belief was if you had players that had contracts that were expiring, then you should be hearing any and all trade offers on those. And quite honestly, I would wonder what the trade conversations look like before the Trent Frederick deal, because I saw the return that the Bruins got for Trent Frederick, a guy who's having a down year who they probably weren't going to re-sign, who is very difficult to predict what a season is going to look like for him on any given year and try to figure out what that relates to numerically for a contract. I looked at the return and went, oh my God, blow the doors off this thing. It's a seller's market to end all seller's markets. And the Bruins, boy, did they agree. So Trent Frederick, Justin Brazo, Brandon Carlo, and Brad Marchand, among other pieces that were moved. As each deal went along, it got more and more. And I'm sorry, Charlie Coyle. I did not mention Coyle. That's a big part of this as well. As each deal went along, you started to get a better and better idea, almost in a sliding scale of, oh, okay, this is a retool. Oh, this is a bigger retool. Oh, this may not be a retool anymore. Oh, this is a rebuild. Oh, we're watching the Providence Bruins play for the rest of the season. That's what it was by the end of the day on Friday. It was a big old game of who the hell is dressing on Saturday. And what you, me, and everybody else couldn't have forecasted is that the Bruins would dress the prime Edmonton Oilers on the road against the Tampa Bay Lightning. You guessed it. Two goals from Cole Koepke. One from Mark Kastelic. Another from Nikita Zadorov. Who would have guessed that? And, you know, heavy minutes being played by Vinny Letteri, Jacob Lauko, the kid whose first name is Merritt, who I'm not going to say his last name, from Minnesota, 92. Patrick Brown. These are your Boston Bruins. So, look, they blew it up. They, taking the Marchand situation out of this, every other deal, I was very, very happy with the return. I thought they nailed the Frederick deal. I think that's a win. The Brazo deal, bit of a wash, but I guess maybe you didn't think you were going to sign that player. You got assets back, multiple assets back. All right, fine. I'll call that one a wash because Brazo was actually having a pretty good year and was a kind of a consummate Bruin, quite honestly. But even if you want to call it a wash, I'll be fine with that. Coyle deals, Carlo deal, big fans of both. I thought you could honestly say Don Sweeney was 3-0-1 in terms of getting good value back for these players. Players that were clearly not part of your vision of what a championship team in Boston is going to look like. And players that are, in Coyle's case, maybe starting to lose a step, very highly paid, and under contracts that you need to use that money elsewhere. And with Carlo, what a frustrating player. What a frustrating player. So much to like, so much to hate about the game of Brandon Carlo. When he was first breaking in the mid-2010s, I looked at him and said, that is the perfect defensive defenseman. That is the guy that's over the boards for every defensive zone draw, every penalty kill. He's perfect. And there were fits and spurts where he was, and there were fits and spurts where he was unplayable. So you kind of got an average bottom pairing on a championship caliber team defenseman with a couple of here, there, and everywhere pop-ups of, oh, this guy actually has some legitimate top four talent. So all of that, I was very happy with the asset management of the Boston Bruins and of Don Sweeney. Sweeney continuing to prove of the elements of his job, trading, free agency, and drafting. Trading continues to be the strongest of the three. Drafting is by far the worst, and then free agency is kind of somewhere in the middle, I would argue. But he has done well to be aggressive where need be and to put his teams roster-wise in positions to win more playoff series than they did. A lot of times it's just gone down to execution. Then there's Brad Marchand. And David, I want to boot up this whole thing from Elliot Friedman, and I want to kind of stop and start as we go. Because Elliot Friedman on Hockey Night in Canada last night dove deeper into what went wrong between Brad Marchand and the Boston Bruins. So let's start this, and then we'll kind of stop and start as we go.
Just a few more things I wanted to go over from the Marchand situation. Number one, I think the Bruins and the player had agreed on term, 3 years. But as Don Sweeney said yesterday, there was a gap, and there was a gap on AAV. And I don't think he was being asked to take a pay cut or anything like that, but I do think it was a sizable gap that they obviously could not bridge.
Okay, pause right there for a sec. So that marries up with a report from John Buccigross, or report. It was a reply to a tweet. Marchand, I don't see why not, saying that he could at the time. This is about a day old. This is before the Elliot Friedman report comes. He said he didn't see why not Marchand could return to Boston. The Bruins offered 2 years around $3 million, I'm told. He wanted 3 years or a little more money for 2 years. I think he deserves it. He's been a good underpaid soldier, always in shape. So if the Bruins end up with a first-round pick, and Marchand back, good deal. Okay. And again, Bucci had the trade return for Marchand before Elliot Friedman, Chris Johnston, Pierre LeBrun, like before anybody else had it confirmed, and before Don Sweeney spoke to the media, Bucci had a second in 2027 that could turn into a first in 2028. So I'm willing to believe that his source on this is legitimate, to where the numbers in the years, 2 to 3 years, $2 to $3 million, that's the kind of territory we're working in. So that's element number one of this, David. Let's keep going, because this is where things take a turn.
Where I think this really went sideways was there was a point this week where Brad Marchand, who was currently injured and not in the lineup, asked for a face-to-face meeting with Bruins management. I don't know exactly when it was. I don't know exactly who was there, but it did happen. And in that meeting, Brad Marchand asked for a compromise. He said, I will compromise. I will bend on some of my ask. I'm asking the Bruins to bend on some of their stance, and we'll find a way to get this deal done, because he wanted to stay as a Bruin. And it just didn't happen. The Bruins had gone as far as they were willing to go. And look, anybody out here watching hockey in the hockey world has watched Brad Marchand play. We know he's going to the Hall of Fame for one major reason. He's got an incredible amount of pride, and he puts everything on the line. I think he was really stung by that. And then all of a sudden, the Bruins started to look, okay, we're not going to go any farther. We're going to start looking out there. And I think one of the things that really happened in the last 24 to 48 hours before the deadline was that Marchand's agent, I was told by several teams, Wade Arnott, made it very clear that Marchand had a place he wanted to go. And obviously that was Florida. And in the last minutes, the Bruins acquiesced and made the deal. But so that's everything I understand there. And I think it really hurt Marchand that the face-to-face meeting couldn't get a deal done.
Okay, lot to unpack from that. The face-to-face meeting, asking for a compromise, couldn't get the deal done. And Marchand was hurt by the fact that that face-to-face meeting didn't get a deal done. So there are a couple things here, and I want to dive into this in just a few minutes to continue this Bruins conversation, because on the one hand, this is a business, and the Bruins very clearly treated this situation strictly like a business. But when you're dealing with a franchise cornerstone, a guy who has been a career Bruin, and honestly, when you're dealing with the years and the dollars that we're talking about, this is unfortunately not the first time that we've heard rumors of the Neely Sweeney regime being very, very tight-fisted with some of their biggest stars. If you remember the Bergeron and the Krejci bizarre returns, where they were playing, then they weren't playing, then they were, but on incentive-laden deals and all that kind of stuff. This has happened before, and it's not the kind of narrative that I want out there about the Boston Bruins. It's not the kind of narrative that I want other teams and other players looking at when we talk about this leadership group and them trying to build a championship team. 617-779-7937. Are you pro or against the Marchand deal? And how do you feel about the Bruins leadership team after the way that they handled the deadline? That is what I want to talk about at 617-779-7937. You can join via call and via text to join the conversation. We'll continue the Bruins conversation in just a couple of moments. But first, here is David Azar and what's trending.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
That's a good point that's raised on TSN. What was the tipping point, and when did you realize, if you're the Boston Bruins, oh, this is the blow it up a clock for us this season? 617-779-7937, back here on WEEI. So the total comings and goings at the 2025 NHL trade deadline. The Bruins send out Charlie Coyle, Justin Brazo, Trent Frederick, Brad Marchand, Brandon Carlo, Mark McLaughlin, who went to the New Jersey Devils, not to be confused with Scott McLaughlin, because I know Dale Arnold sent out the wrong name on Nesson, which was pretty funny. They also sent a 2026 fifth-round pick and a 2026 fourth-round pick. They received center Casey Mittelstadt, left winger Will Zellers, center Jacob Lauko, center Merritt Kuznetsov. I got to double check that pronunciation because that's wrong. Defenseman Max Wanner, defenseman Daniel Mizuel, forward Fraser Mitton, defenseman Henry Jokiharju. That was a late deal that kind of came in the midst of everything in Buffalo. A 2025 second round pick, 2025 second round pick, 2025 fourth round pick, 2026 first, and then the conditional second that can become a first for Brad Marchand. Now, Coyle's deal had a year or two left on it after this year. Brazo was a free agent. Frederick was a free agent. Marchand was a free agent. And then Carlo had one more year after this. So you're talking about deals for rentals for pretty much everybody other than Coyle and, to a lesser extent, Carlo. And the more commitment that was made to the player, as in the more years the player had left on the contract, the better you were actually able to do on these deals. A first-round pick in Fraser Mitton, who's a 20-year-old prospect, a second-round pick, and a very promising player for Brandon Carlo, is clean work by Don Sweeney. 1,000% endorsed. That might be my favorite deal out of all of them for what I think Fraser Mitton can end up being. But we ended our last conversation talking about Brad Marchand and the fact that he came to the table looking for a compromise, and the Bruins weren't able to go that far. This is not the first time that things have gotten a little hairy with the pillars of the franchise in recent years. The Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci returns. Bergeron signs his one-year deal worth $2.5 million on August the 8th of 2022, going into the 22-23 season. If you remember that offseason, it was essentially understood Bergeron will be signing, but why can't the Bruins get this done? Why have they not opened up the proper cap space, and why are they not doing their part to try to make sure this gets done? So he waited and he waited and he waited, and Bergeron was a good soldier, and eventually the Bruins decided that, all right, let's get this done. It was convenient enough for them to sign one of the most important Bruins, a Mount Rushmore Bruin, to a one-year, $2.5 million contract. Now, apparently this is the type of player that you have to be to actually get this veteran deal from the Bruins. There's some kind of gap between Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand, and there is no question about that. There's a gap between those two players, but if you're Bergeron, you get that one-year deal, or you get that veteran extension. You just have to wait all summer for it. If you're Brad Marchand, well, no dice. Look, I don't love that this regime has treated some of the Bruins' veteran players in this way, that it seems like they're not being open and honest with these players about what their expectations are. And it seems like a lot got lost in translation between Sweeney and Neely and everybody involved in the front office and Marchand and his representation here. And it seemed like there were some hurt feelings. Because my whole pitch was, make this trade, sign him back in the offseason, everybody wins. And then you could stick it to Florida. I mean, isn't that also something that would appeal to everybody if you could just be honest with the player about what your plan is? Clearly, Marchand was not looking for a trade, but if you're open and honest with what your expectations are for your franchise, maybe you can work out an understanding. That's what I was advocating for this entire time, for weeks and weeks and weeks. Be the adult in the room. Alex Cora loves the adults in the room. Be the adult in the room that says, listen, Brad, this is not our year. We know that you want to be a career Boston Bruin. We want to give you the best chance to lift one more Stanley Cup as a member of the Boston Bruins. And unfortunately, this roster, this prospect group, and this amount of draft picks are not going to be enough to get it done. Help us help you. And I just don't think at any point that that was the conversation. This seems secretive. This seemed like it was not above board. This seemed like it was not done the right way. And now you have a player whose feelings are hurt. And now we do have to look at the realistic possibility that Brad Marchand may have played his last game as a Boston Bruin because of all this. Does not seem, based on this report from Elliot Friedman, that he is going to do the Boston Bruins any favors in free agency this offseason. So that is concerning. However, I still, despite believing that this, now based on the reporting, believing that this was not handled well or was not handled as well as possible, it's a delicate situation that does not seem to have been handled delicately. You still needed to do something like this. People are banged up about the fact that you didn't get a guaranteed first round pick or multiple picks or just a better return in exchange for this player. We have no idea the health of Brad Marchand right now. We have no idea. And I don't think any team in hockey has any idea what he's thinking past this year until this report from Elliot Friedman, which said that he had one place in mind and would be willing to move his trade protection in order to go to Florida. So the Bruins were in a situation where they wanted to move the player. They told the player that they were not willing to sign this extension and that they were going to be moving him. And then they just have to take what they can get in that trade. So again, I think for the near impossible situation that the Bruins put themselves in, handling the negotiation poorly and telling a player with trade protection that we're going to trade you, a conditional second that can become a first is a good return for a guy whose contract is expiring, a guy who is injured, and a guy who was able to call a shot for where he wanted to go. It's a good return. So there are multiple different ways to feel about this. And if you're pissed off at Don Sweeney and Cam Neely and everybody who's involved in the Bruins front office, that's fine. I think based on the reporting from Elliot Friedman, you're completely justified in being upset at the way that it seems like they handled this negotiation with this player. However, if you are of a pragmatic dollars and cents mind, and you like the fact that they did it, the fact that they got value that could become a first round pick, then I think you're also justified in that. It's okay to be sad about what happened, but rational about what the result was. That's perfectly fine to me. But this one's going to sting for a while. This one is going to sting, especially now that we learn that maybe it was not the prettiest of divorces that sent Marchand out of town. So now the Bruins, icing their Providence roster, have to try to play the rest of the season, and they got off to a rip-roaring start yesterday. On the road against the 37-22-4 Tampa Bay Lightning, they win 4-0. They're now 29-28-8. Jeremy Swayman, a 26-save shutout as part of the victory. So what's the math, you may ask, across the rest of the NHL? The Bruins are up against it, but they're not out of it, which is kind of wild to look at. So Ottawa and Columbus, two teams that have been garbage over the last half decade, are in the wild card right now. They have 69 and 68 points respectively. The Rangers have 68 points as well. Then you have the Red Wings and the Canadiens and the Bruins at 66 points. Bruins have two more games played than all three teams that are in front of them in the wild card right now. So you're going to have to start winning head-to-head matchups in order to claw back in this thing. But based on the comments from players who were interviewed after this, maybe this is the kick in the ass that this team needed. Who knows? They probably don't have the talent to make the playoffs. Maybe now they finally have the fire and the focus, because the inconsistencies this year with this team have been so incredibly frustrating. World beaters and beaten by the world within the same game, within minutes. The amount of times this team has given up goals within 2 minutes of each other, or scored a goal and then given up a goal within 2 minutes, or given up goals within the last minutes of periods. I've seen the lists. It's a lot longer than it should be. A lot longer than it should be. Here is David Pastrnak. I think the last two games, we were amazing. That's the way we need to play for the rest of the year. We're going to win more games than we lose if we play like this and compete every night like we did in Carolina and tonight. Swayman said they did so much for this organization, then they left the groundwork for us to build off of. So it's our job. The guys are in this room to continue that legacy and just understand that we're going to be friends for life. They're stuck with us, and that's a good thing. So hearing from Pastrnak and Swayman was a little tough to stomach from an emotional perspective with the way that they talked about these guys. Swayman said on the broadcast, and to paraphrase it just a tad, it's tough to get out of practice and have lunch plans with these guys, and then all of a sudden you see that they're traded. That's tough. Poor Sway. He lost his hug partner in Linus Ullmark, and now he's lost like half the actual NHL players on the roster in the matter of about 6 months. But he responded. Pastrnak is having an MVP caliber year, and it's a bit of a shame that the team is not following along, because if they were in a bit of a better spot, I think he'd be getting more mentions. I think if they continue to claw their way or keep themselves in this wild card conversation and get closer, maybe he continues to merit even more conversation about that. Who knows? But for the time being, it was a devastating day for a lot of fans. And I'm right there with you. But the window had to shut for another one to open. And so I am happy that they actually finally made a statement, drew a line in the sand, and said, this thing's over. We're blowing it up. We're starting from scratch. We're finally putting some draft picks and some younger players into this core. I'm in on that. 617-779-7937 is the phone number if you'd like to get involved. So I was told that LeBron James and Luka Doncic were supposed to be the best duo in the NBA that we would see this year, a historic duo, a championship caliber duo. Hey, they went on quite the little winning streak after the trade. They were deserving of that kind of praise. Have you seen Luka and LeBron? Have you seen the new look Los Angeles Lakers? Have you seen Coach of the Year J.J. Redick and how he's just pushing all the right buttons and definitely coaching this team and not just having his podcast partner call all the shots, both for trades and for actual play on the court? Have you seen the Lakers? That's what I was told going into yesterday. And look, these are two players that are made for each other. That's for darn sure. Because the only one that whines and complains and bitches better than one is the other. The only one that has something to say about every single play more than LeBron is Luka. And the only one that has something to say about every single play more than Luka is LeBron. Oh my God. What a display in team building in the NBA is what I would say to that. We are so freaking lucky in Boston right now to have a team that's as good as the Celtics, built with the kind of players that are on the Boston Celtics. Yes, they're frustrating. Yes, the injuries are a pain. Yes, there are things that make us pull our hair out. So that's going to happen with any team, good, bad, or otherwise. But at least you can say these guys work hard, they battle for each other, and it does seem more times than not that it's about the greater good of the team and about making the next play more so than it's about the individual who's involved. Sure, there's some ego that's going to be attached at certain points right up at the top with Tatum and Brown. They are two of the best and most highly paid players in the NBA. They are supposed to be the two stars, the dynamic duo that leads this team to the promised land. There's going to be a little bit of that. But can you imagine having to watch the antics and the mannerisms of Luka Doncic and LeBron James together? It was already insufferable enough watching Luka by himself do all the things that make him Luka Doncic in the finals last year. Then you pair Luka with the greatest to ever do it from a nursing the call out of the officials category in LeBron James. Look, these guys are otherworldly talented, and I fully understand that. And it brings me to an incredibly well-written blurb from our own Megan Ottolini on the EEI website. There's still juice in this matchup. Ticket prices, national debates, and one has to predict ratings reflect the omnipresent position of the Lakers that they still hold in the basketball world. The NBA finds itself in another adolescent-like transitional phase, with 40-year-old James eyeing his exit, Steph Curry in near emeritus status, and Kevin Durant wandering the desert. What better way to crown Tatum and as the debated until everyone is nauseated face of the league than have him lead his team in defending a title against a historic rival and the second greatest player in NBA history? Oh, please, basketball gods, let this rematch happen. It's been 15 years since the Celtics-Lakers final, and if LA has to be tripping into generational players like James and Doncic, it's only fair that they face Boston in the championship once a generation. Well put, and I fully co-sign. I would love to see these two teams, two of the two historic franchises in the NBA, go at it for 7 games. And it's for a much different reason than I would like to see Boston and Cleveland go at it for 7 games in an Eastern Conference final. That's just good basketball. Two hard-nosed teams, two deep teams, teams that can go 7, 8, 9 deep on the bench. Just good, fundamental, fun, fast-paced basketball between those two teams. That is a nuts-and-bolts, X's-and-O's basketball fans' dream series in the Eastern Conference final. Boston and Los Angeles? It's history and it's drama, baby. It's drama. It is just as much a soap opera from the Los Angeles Lakers as it is a series. It really is. There is always one more comment that needs to be made from somebody on the side of the Los Angeles Lakers. And I think the Celtics would revel in that. It honestly, watching these two teams battle yesterday showed me that, yeah, all right, there's a lot of talent on this Los Angeles team, but Boston doesn't care. They do not care. Yap, 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 to your heart's content, LeBron, Luka, anybody else. Keep on talking this entire way home. We're just going to keep doing our thing. We're just going to keep balling. You guys can tire yourself out if you really want, but you're not going to slow us down by doing that. We're going to play our game, and you're going to have to find a way to shut up and answer us. And nothing about last night proved to me that the Lakers have enough to stop the Celtics in a 7-game series. And specifically, they have enough to stop Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who showed up when it mattered most. The second 30-30 game of the season for Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, this from my man Terp, also from EEI, Justin Turpin. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown scored or assisted on 34 of the Celtics' 40 makes last night, 85%. Tatum had 12 field goals made, 8 assists. Jaylen Brown, 13 field goals made, 2 assists. Outstanding. That, right there, that is the dynamic duo that I want to ride with into the playoffs, into an NBA final. It honestly became comical last night. It really did. I just found myself the entire time as things were going down going, thank God I'm on the side of this that I am. Because if these two teams were reversed and I was watching the two heads of the complaint department as a member of the green team, fan base. Oh, boy. Break out the Advil. Break out the aspirin. Whatever you take, because you'd need it to try to get through watching those two in a game that matters most. But the Celtics stepped up and they delivered. They are certainly firing on all cylinders right now. And looking like, even with the injuries and the inconsistencies in the lineup over the past 2 weeks, that seemed to hurt them tremendously in December and January. The inconsistencies in the lineup really seemed to be an issue. Now, Celtics very much taking the different lineup combinations in stride and making the best of whatever situation comes their way. We move on and we wrap up this little show we have here on WEEI with some NFL conversation. We haven't had a chance to get to the New England Patriots or the rest of the conversation going around in the NFL. There's been a lot. The goalposts continue to move, so to speak, in that teams that have business to attend to this offseason, contracts that need to be signed, teams like the Cincinnati Bengals, for example, with two big wide receivers that are looking for some kind of long-term commitment. It gets more and more and more expensive to do your own business in the NFL with some of the deals that have been coming around. So there are headlines on the offensive line, headlines at the wide receiver position, two of the biggest needs for the Patriots this offseason. We wrap up our conversation on the other side. Talking Pats, that's next.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Okay, boom. From Boston Connor, appropriately named, being very excited that Daniel Jeremiah, who's the actual, you know, journalist that was joining the Pat McAfee show, excited about what he had to say about DK Metcalf, wide receiver for the Seattle Seahawks for the time being. Seahawks going through a lot of changes right now. That includes at the quarterback position with Geno Smith. So plenty of meat still on that bone that we don't have time to get to today. But this is the reporting about DK Metcalf. These reports came in two different ways, one from Josina Anderson and the other from Diana Russini. The first from Josina Anderson, I heard from one league source who expressed a team's willingness to pay a top tier new money APY on an extension for a free agent wide receiver. However, in DK Metcalf's case, said club is currently unwilling to go higher than a third round pick and pay, quote, Ayuk and St. Brown neighborhood money. So that's one. That is high value in terms of a contract, but that is a third round pick, which is, I don't know, relatively easy to stomach. So that's where it was before. Now, from Diana Russini, this came out this morning, what she's hearing: the Seahawks' asking price for wide receiver DK Metcalf has lowered, per sources. So this is also different from what Josina Anderson was hearing, because Seattle would be open to a return centered around a second-round pick for the two-time Pro Bowl receiver. Metcalf ideally wants to play in a warm-weather climate and is looking to make $30 million per year. Well, I can't help you with the climate. Unfortunately, there is nothing I can do, as my car was being blown all over the highway yesterday as I was just trying to mind my own business and drive on the already chaotic 93. You know what I didn't need? The wind yesterday when I was just trying to keep my car straight in that traffic. Anyways, I digress, and thank you for taking that ride with me. Justin Jefferson makes $35 million, CeeDee Lamb, $34, A.J. Brown, $32, Amon-Ra St. Brown, $30, and then $2,500. Tyreek Hill, Brandon Ayuk, $30 million. Then you got Jaylen Waddle, D.J. Moore, Cooper Kupp, and T. Higgins, who's playing on the tag. Unfortunately, for a guy of DK Metcalf's stature, $30 million is the going rate. You're going to have to get to that number. The good thing is it doesn't seem like he wants to reset the wide receiver market, because he's not Justin Jefferson. He's not CeeDee Lamb. However, if you pair him with Drake May, I'd at least be fascinated to see what he would be capable of, because he's always played in an offense that's had a number of different options to where it's not held him back, but it's just put him in a certain role where maybe he hasn't been as explosive as he could. When you know you're dealing with Tyler Lockett on the other side of your offense, Jaxon Smith-Njigba comes in. He's also a fantastic player, kind of played a bit in the slot. And so they've had a very good wide receiver room in Seattle. If you make DK Metcalf your true number one in New England, and that's the guy who Drake May, and now his second year as the Patriots quarterback, is able to build that relationship with, I would be willing to overpay and pay the suck tax on a four-year, $120 million contract on for DK Metcalf in exchange for maybe an early third-round pick, because I don't know if you're in the market to give them as early in the second round as you're going to get. 38, I think, is what was mentioned in that clip. Early third, maybe a late sixth or seventh, and then you're giving that kind of money, $30 million, to finally once and for all solve this wide receiver one conversation that you just don't have an answer for right now. I'd be willing to do that. And the thing is, it's kind of Chris Godwin or bust at this point if you don't. As the Patriots are viewed as being in the driver's seat on this DK Metcalf conversation, according to other reports across the league, if you don't make that move and you don't get Chris Godwin, what are you going to do? Now Ronnie Stanley is off the market, so you're going further and further down your offensive line depth chart. Cam Robinson, Dan Moore. I'll read the note that I saw on Twitter from Matt St. Jean. Cam Robinson allowed the most pressures in the NFL last year and cost money. Dan Moore, worst starting offensive tackle in 2023 and cost money. Vidarian Lowe, not good in penalty machine. Will Campbell, maybe not a tackle and cost the number four pick. Oh, great. So if that's what the options are becoming at on the offensive line, you have this money to spend. You have assets to spend. Spend it somewhere. Even if you're wrong. Even if you're wrong in that position. And maybe he doesn't end up warranted. Maybe he's more in the $25 to $26 to $27 million per year wide receiver type range in terms of the stats that he puts up. Isn't that worth it? Isn't it worth it paying a little bit extra to try to just once and for all finally solve this issue? Honestly, David, I don't care that DK Metcalf doesn't want to or wants to play in a warm climate. That's why trades exist. That's why trades exist. I know he's got to sign the contract extension, but regardless, that's the latest going on in the wide receiver conversation. We are out of time here on WEEI, but the full slate coming back tomorrow beginning at 6 a.m. with the Greg Hill Show. Then you got Jones and Keefe. I will be with you on the trending reports on WEEI afternoons tomorrow afternoon, so hope you'll tune in to hear Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, myself, and my man Stanley Stiz Bruno back behind the glass on a Monday. Hope you have a fantastic rest of your weekend, and keep it locked because the Infinity Sports Network is coming up next here on WEEI. Thanks.